The Jets play the Eagles this weekend. We will get the inside scoop from Gino Camilleri of Locked On Eagles. Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast for Thursday, December 2nd, 2021. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com, thanking you for making this show your first listen each day. Today, it's Crossover Thursday. We will preview this weekend's game between the Jets and the Eagles ahead on the Locked On Jets podcast.
You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Today's episode of Locked On Jets is brought to you by Stat Hero. Stat Hero is the first of its kind daily fantasy sports platform where it's you versus the house in head-to-head fantasy matchups, winner take all. Sign up for free right now at stathero.com/lockedon and use promo code LOCKEDON for a 100% deposit match. Shortly, I will be joining Gino Camilleri, the co-host of Locked On Eagles, for our Crossover Thursday show this week. The Jets play the Eagles this weekend at the Meadowlands. Gino will tell you everything you need to know about the Eagles, but the Jets have done something that, at least on paper, should make me happy. Robert Saleh announced on Wednesday that there will be an open competition for the kicking job at practice this week. Now, for weeks, I have been saying the Jets need to find a new kicker. They have not done that, but they are at least open to the idea of putting Matt Amendola on the bench or perhaps letting him go, because Amendola will be competing against Alex Kessman this week, and I guess whoever wins the competition in practice will be the kicker this Sunday. Now, Kessman may not be a name you're familiar with. The Jets just recently signed him a few weeks back. He was a free agent. He was signed to the practice squad, and he kicked collegiately at Pittsburgh. Kicker has been one of my great frustrations with Joe Douglas, because there are so many things that are tough to do in the NFL, like build an offensive line, build a defense, find corners, find a quarterback. Kicker is easy. Kicker should be the easiest thing in the world, because there are more than 32 individuals at any point in time who are capable of competently kicking the ball between the goalposts. But Joe Douglas has just ignored the position. And I don't mean financially. I don't think teams should spend big on kickers unless you have a Justin Tucker who you know is going to hit 90% of his field goals every single year. If you look through the recent history of the NFL, kicker is a spot where there has been wild fluctuation from year to year. A guy who hits 90% of his kicks this year, last year, really struggles the next year. And if everybody's roughly equal, and teams do a really lousy job of evaluating kickers, they do a really lousy job of training kickers, there's no consistency. So if everybody's got roughly the same chance of being good or bad, you might as well roll the dice on somebody who's cheap. But the issue is Joe Douglas takes guys who just aren't good enough to kick in the NFL. Like I said, there are more than 32 individuals capable of being a competent kicker in the NFL. I think history has shown this, at least recent history. Yet Joe Douglas does not target these guys. He targets guys with huge legs who cannot kick the ball through the goalposts. And I worry a little bit when I study Alex Kessman. He played college football at Pittsburgh, and he fits the profile of a Joe Douglas kicker, where he has this monster leg. He can conceivably hit kicks from the deep 50s, maybe even the 60-yard range. But he struggles on accuracy. In college, he was around a 70% kicker. Now, lots of touchbacks. I just don't understand why Joe Douglas is so fixated on getting a kicker with a big leg. Get a guy who can hit it through the goalposts. That's 3 points. 3 points is more important than field position. And listen, you're probably not going to hit a long kick. The gain for hitting one of those long kicks is very marginal. In most situations, you're not really going to use a kicker to try and hit one from 55, 56, 60 yards, unless it's a desperation situation, because even guys with huge legs have a tough time hitting those kicks. And usually the risk-reward's not really on your side, because if you miss those kicks, which there's a good chance you will, even with a kicker with a huge leg, you're going to give the other team great field position. So it really only comes into play in like a late game, maybe at the end of the half, but a late game situation where you drive the ball and you end up kind of on the fringes of field goal range, and maybe that little extra bit of leg strength puts you into field goal range. But how many times does that really happen? Now listen, it could happen this weekend. Just watch the Jets win this game on like a 61-yard field goal as time expires, and everybody will be laughing at me. And listen, I hope that's the case. But it seems like Joe Douglas is so focused on these situations that which very rarely come up, at the expense of situations which come up very frequently. Matt Amendola, how many kicks does he have to miss before Joe Douglas realizes this is a bad idea? Joe Douglas' first game as general manager of the Jets. They lost. Not entirely. Now listen, they should have won the game anyway, but they lost in part because they got a kicker, Kari Vedvik, who wasn't any good, who had a huge leg, but could not hit the ball through the uprights. So anyway, I've probably talked way too much about the kicker position. This is just my way of venting about my frustrations about the way the Jets have handled it, because it's so easy compared to other things. I know it's not the biggest problem on the team, but there will be an open competition this week for the kicker job, and the winner of the competition will be the kicker this Sunday against the Eagles. And we'll see. Matt Amendola does not necessarily need to be cut if he loses this competition, because in the NFL, beginning last year, you can elevate up to two players from your practice squad without giving them a spot on the roster on game day. So you can play a game and still be a practice squad player. And that goes on for a couple of weeks. After, I think, 2 weeks, if you want to activate a practice squad player for a third game, then you have to give him a 53-man roster spot. But the first 2 weeks, you can bring up a player, put him in the game, and you don't have to give him a roster spot. So that could be what happens, or the Jets could just move on from Amendola. I mean, I don't see why the Jets are keeping Amendola around. But that's just me. Anyway, we have a game to talk about. Enough about the kickers. Everybody's probably heard enough about me talking about the kickers. So when we come back, Gino Camilleri of Locked On Eagles is going to join me. We're going to talk about this weekend's game between the New York Jets and the Philadelphia Eagles ahead here on the Locked On Jets podcast. Of course, you're getting ready for the Jets game against the Eagles this weekend, but you might have a game of your own because a lot of you play daily fantasy sports. And nobody plays it to lose. Winning feels so much better. But traditional fantasy sports are a long-term losing proposition because you never know who or what you're up against. But StatHero is the first of its kind daily fantasy sports platform where it's you versus the house in head-to-head fantasy matchups, winner take all. And here's the crazy part. StatHero shows you their lineups before you play, and you handpick the team you want to face one-on-one. This never-before-seen innovation of a fantasy sports and sports betting hybrid has StatHero players clocking odds that are over four times better. Why? Because you don't have to compete against thousands of experts or unknowns. StatHero puts you in control of your fate. With StatHero, you're in control of the stakes. You decide how much you're going to play for, and StatHero has no choice but to take it because they're daring you to beat them. StatHero is head-to-head what daily fantasy sports should be, one-on-one. So sign up for free right now at StatHero.com/LockedOn and use promo code LockedOn for a 100% deposit match. Again, that's StatHero.com/LockedOn. Promo code LockedOn for a 100% deposit match. StatHero.com/LockedOn. Promo code LockedOn. It's one word with no space. LOCKEDON. Terms and conditions apply. The Jets and the Eagles play this Sunday. This is John from Locked On Jets along with Gino from Locked On Eagles. We have crossover Thursday today here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Gino, nice to speak with you today.
Yeah, this is one of those events that doesn't happen very often. We have the addition of the 17th game this season, so that's why we get to play each other outside of the four-year rotation and, of course, outside of our annual final preseason game of the year, which always is an event when guys are making their way onto the roster. It's always a great final preseason game, but we're talking regular season action between two rookie head coaches and two quarterbacks that are, I would say, judged as rookies right now in Wilson and Jalen Hurts.
Absolutely. And that's what I was about to mention, that annual preseason game. It's probably the least consequential game each team plays every year. Maybe not so much for the guys playing because they're competing for roster spots. But I was thinking the exact same thing. Oh, we don't play the Eagles much, but we really do. We see each other every year, and it is the backup bowl. And maybe there should be like a trophy for that game.
We actually do award a preseason trophy for our podcast. We call it the Ja'Cory Shepherd Annual Award. He was a great camp body that we had a couple of years ago. So we award it to the best camp body every year, and it usually comes down to that final Jets game. So it does mean a lot to our fans over at Locked On Eagles, and it means a lot that each year you are going into a season, and that's the last rep that you're going to see before you kick off. And for the Eagles, started out hot, but things kind of slipped up down the way, and then they're here back in contention for the playoffs, which if you were to ask me before this season started if that was going to be in the conversation, I would have said no way.
All right, well, Gino, let me begin by asking you what's going on with the Eagles quarterback position this week.
Yeah, so right now it looks like Jalen Hurts should be a good to go. It could have been questionable if it was a higher ankle sprain, but it looks like it is a lower ankle sprain. It is kind of ironic that their right guard, Jack Driscoll, suffered that same injury last week against the Giants, and he's out for multiple weeks, but it just happened to be a high ankle sprain on Jack Driscoll rather than a low ankle sprain on Jalen Hurts that he suffered from somebody just stepping on his ankle. He should be good to go. He was limited in practice today, as well as a lot of guys on this team. There were probably upwards of 10 to 12 guys that either were limited in practice or did not practice today. With this 14th week on the schedule as the bye week because of this 17th game, the Eagles are beaten and banged up, and a guy in Jalen Hurts at the quarterback position who does like to negotiate outside of the pocket, and that does leave him susceptible to hits. Sometimes him going head-on with a linebacker, he gets up and he's okay, but then he's just standing in the pocket, and on accident he gets stepped on by his offensive line. And we're sitting here going into a game against the Jets where they really do need to come out firing and get a win if they want to stay in this discussion for the playoffs. Or if you suffer a loss at the hands of the Jets, a team that with Joe Douglas in the front office and now Joe Flacco there as well, there's a lot of, I would say, similarities between this team and terms of how they're built, how they're trying to get built. And it all starts with that quarterback position. Both teams have guys that are very good athletes and very smart players at that position.
How would you grade Hurts' performance so far this season?
Yeah, I would say that you kind of have to grade Jalen almost as if you're playing around a golf. You got to take it hole by hole. You got to see each game as it is. And early on in the season, I think they were making him pass too much. There were times that he had upwards of 40 to 45 pass attempts. That is way too much for Jalen Hurts. But what you have seen in the past couple weeks where he's throwing anywhere between 18 to 31, which was his maximum throws in last week's game, he has done a better job because he has that athleticism, which will help him out by allowing him to get outside the pocket, pick up yards on the ground with his legs. So teams have to respect his running ability. But if you want to beat him, you do what the Giants did last week and you make him be a quarterback. The one thing about Jalen Hurts is that you can't judge him on his confidence, his ability to go out and compete in games, and his toughness. He has that up and down the charts. There's so many examples of it. But when it comes to the arm talent, and you talk about a guy on the other side of the field in Zach Wilson, who, I mean, everybody has seen clips of Zach Wilson throwing the ball 65-plus yards. He has unbelievable arm talent. It's when a game is in that passing territory where you have to pass your way back into a game. If you're down 14 or 17 points very quick in a game, can Jalen Hurts get to that point? I would give Jalen Hurts on the ground an A-plus. With his arm, a C to a C-minus. Yeah, I still need to see more, and even a lot of the examples I saw weren't against the best defenses in the league. Outside of the Chargers, which was a pretty decent defense, but still, he's not doing enough to even be a guy that you can win with. Last week, he fully cost them that game with three interceptions. He can't do that again against the Jets. He has to come out there, play smart football, and be able to not turn the ball over. That's all they ask of Jalen Hurts. And then pick up yards on the ground. That's fine. They're a run happy team. They're efficient on the ground. If they keep it that way and they don't put the ball in the air 40 times a game, they'll be okay.
Who are some of the top weapons on this Eagles offense?
Yeah, so when you look at this offense, you have to look instantly to DeVonta Smith. DeVonta Smith has been one of the best receivers, I think, in the NFC East and one of the better ones in football as a whole. A guy who is maybe 165 pounds soaking wet, does not play like a guy who has his frame and has his build. He plays much bigger. I was at the game in Denver a couple weeks ago where he went up against Pat Surtain on a 50-50 ball and quote-unquote mossed Pat Surtain for his first touchdown of the game. He has been the most efficient receiver. He has been the best blocking receiver in terms of their top three weapons. Their next best weapon isn't a receiver. It's a tight end in Dallas Goedert, who they had enough confidence in to trade away Zach Ertz, who is going to be probably a Hall of Famer and is all pro year in and year out, to Arizona, who's looking to make a Super Bowl run. But a team in the position of Philadelphia had Dallas Goedert in their back pocket, who's a top six tight end right now in football. And it's been those two guys in the passing game to get things done. Outside of them, it's been a lot of those yards on the ground. It comes from the offensive line being able to dominate defensive lines, and guys like Jordan Howard, Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, Kenny Gainwell, in a committee-style approach, picking up enough yards on the ground to get it done. The area that they lack in, I would say, is pure passing. But when it comes down to a game where they're going to grind you out, where they're going to run down the clock for 6-plus minutes in the fourth quarter to get a win, that's where the Eagles succeed on offense, and it comes from their offensive line. Those guys won't get the recognition and the star power from playing fantasy football, but they're the best unit on this team, bar none.
And my last question for you is just on the other side of the ball. Can you name some key players on this Eagles defense?
You have to look right at that defensive line. Javon Hargrave, Fletcher Cox, two of the best interior rushers in football right now. The only area that can kind of be good and bad for them is that they are an attack first defense where they want those defensive linemen to get upfield. But if you are playing an offense where they get the ball out quickly, you could kind of overcome that. But if it turns out to be like the game a couple years ago where they played the Jets, where they just sent the house multiple times, different defensive coordinator, but a guy who coaches very similarly, Jonathan Gannon, has this approach to his defense where he is going to make it difficult for a young quarterback with those guys up front. Because on the back end, you have Darius Slay, who hasn't allowed a reception in weeks, I feel. Nobody throws his way, and he simply has been the best defensive player I have seen at the cornerback position in Philadelphia since Asante Samuel, without a doubt. And he's a guy that is a game changer, and I would put the ball in his hands any day of the week. If you want to throw at him, go ahead, but you should pick on Steven Nelson on the other side, who is not nearly as good as Darius Slay. But I look at those big three, Javon Hargrave, Fletcher Cox, Darius Slay, should be all pro candidates, at least Pro Bowl candidates for sure. But I would give Javon Hargrave and Darius Slay Pro Bowl and all pro nods right now. They've been playing exceptional football.
Gino gave us a tremendous look at the Philadelphia Eagles, but this is a crossover episode of Locked On Jets and Locked On Eagles. So we're about to flip the script. Gino will lead us back in, and we will talk about the New York Jets.
And if you like to put money down on games, hopefully we're giving you good information that you can use. And hopefully you're using BetOnline, because BetOnline has you covered all season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. As football season continues the march to the playoffs, BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the sports action this season. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. And just use promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. That promo code is one word with no space, Locked On, LOCKEDON. And again, it's a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season, because BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, it's where the game starts.
Welcome on back, everybody, to this Crossover Thursday edition here with the host of Locked On Eagles, Gino Camilleri, and our good friend over at Locked On Jets, John Buchko. John, what is going on in New York? We're coming up to the Meadowlands for a second consecutive week. The Philadelphia Eagles lost at the hands of the Giants last week. The Jets are in a position where they're looking, I would say, maybe towards the end of the season, towards the draft. They're in this couple-year rebuild mode. But it looks like they've been playing better football here down the last couple weeks. What has been going on in New York, and do you expect them to put up a good fight against Philadelphia in the Meadowlands?
Well, in all honesty, the biggest factor in the improved performances of the last couple of weeks has probably been the level of competition, because they went from playing teams like New England and Indianapolis and Buffalo to the Dolphins, and then last week the Houston Texans. The Jets were very uneven last weekend against Houston, and I think that that win had as much to do with the Texans as it did the Jets. That said, The Lions did play better than they had in recent weeks. I think the Jets did control the trenches. Again, part of this is probably due to the opponent that they were playing. On the defensive line, the guys came to play. John Franklin Myers had gotten a contract extension earlier in the autumn and really had not done much since then. He registered a pair of sacks and made a nice interception on a deflected pass early in the game. Quinnen Williams, the third overall pick from 2019, has been inconsistent this year. There have been games where he's been dominant, and there have been games where he's really been pushed around. And that was especially true in the weeks following the bye, where the Jets defense, I think the first three games out of the bye, was allowing 45 points per game. It was ugly. They were getting pushed around up front. This team really is built around the defensive line on that side of the ball. Now on offense, they've got some pieces. Elijah Moore has really come on in recent weeks. He was one of the stars of training camp for the Jets. He suffered an injury before the start of the preseason, so we did not get to see him in the annual rivalry preseason game between the Jets and the Eagles, although we may not have anyway because he is a starter. He began the season kind of slow, but the last couple of weeks he's really come on strong. He's become a featured part of the offense. They're getting him the ball in space on end-arounds, jet sweeps. They're trying to throw him screens, and he also has started making big plays. He got a lot of speed. A couple of weeks ago against Miami, he had a long touchdown catch. On the offensive line, there's been a change. The Jets made a deal at the deadline, acquiring Laurent Duvernay-Tardif from the Kansas City Chiefs. He replaced Greg Van Roten at right guard. And Van Roten has been the weak link all season for the Jets. The Jets don't have a great offensive line, but they have some workable parts there. And they did everywhere except for right guard. I think there's been a big difference the last couple of weeks with him in there. He's helped stabilize the offensive line and gotten into a place where it's credible, where the Jets can at least hold their own in the trenches.
So let's stick with that offense. And you talk about this offensive line. Has the run game been there behind that offensive line, or has it been one of those things where they're trying to set up this passing offense so teams key in on the run? Or has the rush game been successful, because the Eagles are a team that allow a ton of yards to running backs, both in the pass game and on the ground?
Last weekend, the run game was very good. It's been a struggle prior to that. And I think a lot of that went back to the run blocking, particularly Van Roten at right guard. Now, I don't want to put it all on him. I don't think it's fair to blame one player, but the Jets had a quality rookie back, Michael Carter, who they got early in the fourth round, who was playing very well. And if you look at some of the advanced stats, whether it's yards after contact or forced tackles missed, he was in the upper echelon of the league in those categories. And yet his yards per carry average was not very good, which indicates the Jets have been kind of struggling with their run blocking. I do think things have stabilized a bit the last couple of weeks. And again, that might go back to the change that they made at right guard, but it hasn't been consistent enough this season. And they brought in, of course, Robert Saleh as their new head coach. He came from San Francisco. The offensive coordinator is Mike LaFleur, who the Jets also brought in from San Francisco. And he has installed what's known as, the quote unquote Shanahan offense. And that offense is built around the run. I think that the goal of this offense was to try and protect Zach Wilson by running the ball effectively and keeping him out of bad downs and distances. And that really did not happen the first couple of weeks of the season. And after Wilson went out of the lineup with an injury, they kind of made some adjustments and they've started throwing the ball more on earlier downs. So I think the run game was something they were counting on. I don't think it's been there. Again, last week they were good. Last week it was pretty effective. And maybe the change on the offensive line had something to do with that. But it's been a disappointment.
You mentioned the ability to make men miss, and I think back to the Denver game when they played Michael Carter's teammate in Javonte Williams, who had success against the Eagles, and I could really see a guy like Michael Carter having his way against this Eagles defense, which does allow running backs to get some yards on this team. You look now at the passing game, and I want to ask this from a perspective because they just bring in Zach Wilson this year. You bring in Elijah Moore. It has a lot to do with the guy who was making those selections in Joe Douglas, who comes from Philadelphia, comes from the general manager Howie Roseman's tree. What has been your overall impression of Joe Douglas, and especially on this offense with those first few picks he made with him, AVT, and Elijah Vera Tucker, and then Elijah Moore? What has been your perspective on that offense, and do you like the direction that they're headed?
That's a great question, and before I get into it, I do want to put your mind at ease, Gino, and all you Eagles fans listening. Michael Carter's actually out of this game. He suffered an ankle injury a few weeks ago, so you guys can relax. Although the Jets did run the ball pretty effectively last week with a committee comprised of Tevin Coleman and Ty Johnson. I should have mentioned that when I was talking about Michael Carter. As far as Joe Douglas goes, I think it's too early to say whether or not he's the right guy for the Jets as their general manager. I think objectively, he inherited a mess. The previous general manager, and frankly, the two general managers who preceded him, did a horrible job drafting. They did not make effective free agent signings. The cupboard was really bare when Joe Douglas arrived. And as Eagle fans may remember, the Jets hired Joe Douglas at kind of an odd time of the offseason. It was after the draft. It was after the Jets had spent what was then a record amount of money in free agency. And then they fired their general manager after that, after essentially letting him overhaul the roster. And that meant that Joe Douglas, his first year, really was not able to do a whole lot. Now, he did make a few moves. He signed Ryan Khalil to play center before the start of training camp, a move that really was a complete failure. But his first year really wasn't until 2020. And even then, the Jets still had a kind of a difficult cap situation. He really was not able to maneuver a whole lot. So this is the first Jets team that really you can say is Joe Douglas's. And so far, the record has been mixed. I think if you look at his first draft class, there's a lot of disappointment. Now, some of it's not his fault. Mekhi Becton, the first round pick in 2020, has missed pretty much the entire season this year. He got hurt the first week against Carolina, suffered a knee injury. The Jets are hoping to get him back at some point before the end of the season. Second round pick Denzel Mims, there's a lot of different stories on him. It just has not meshed with the coaching staff. You know, we don't really know the whole story there, but the coaches just don't want to play him. Third round picks were Ashton Davis, who's been kind of a disappointment. You'll see him at safety this week. He's been a liability in the back of this defense. Another third round pick was Jabari Zuniga, who's a practice squatter right now. The one saving grace of this draft class was the fifth round pick Bryce Hall, a corner who looks like he's going to be a quality starter. But the 2021 class looks pretty good right now. Now, Zach Wilson struggled, but you mentioned Elijah Vera Tucker. The Jets traded up for him in the first round. He looks good. He looks promising. We talked about Elijah Moore. We talked about Michael Carter. So there are some pieces on this offense the Jets have. And in addition to that, they got a guy who looks like a steal in the fifth round, Michael Carter II. Jets actually drafted two players named Michael Carter this year. Michael Carter out of North Carolina, Michael Carter II out of Duke. Michael Carter II is a slot corner, and he's been very good. So there are some promising signs here. Now, Douglas has taken a different approach than other recent Jets general managers. The Jets have had a number of general managers, Mike Tannenbaum and Mike Maccagnan, who really spent big in free agency. Douglas has spent in free agency, but he's avoided the guys at the top of the market. He's looked for more, I don't know if value deals is the right word, because Corey Davis got a pretty big money deal. Carl Lawson got a pretty big money deal, but they've avoided like the really splashy big name guys in free agency, which is an approach I appreciate because that approach has backfired for the Jets in the past. I think the jury is still out on Joe Douglas. This is really kind of year one of the rebuild. The Jets are the youngest team in the NFL, so you were expecting to take some losses this year. There's been some good, some bad, some promising, some disturbing. I think we need to wait and see.
That's what we're doing here with Howie Roseman, and we've been waiting or seeing for 12 years now, and that's one of those things. If you don't find a general manager that has the connection with your coaching staff, you are going to be in trouble, and I think Joe Douglas is in that position right now. You bring in Saleh, who's a defensive-minded head coach. You could kind of take away the development issues on the defensive side of the ball, knowing that your head coach is going to be very hands-on. Looking at this defense, the last question I'll ask you, do you like the direction of this defense and what your head coach is doing? Because sometimes, and I know in Philadelphia, they haven't loved the idea of bringing in defensive-minded head coaches. Has it been okay with Robert Saleh and his messaging, and has his defense, I know they allow a lot of points, but do you see the intricacies in what he wants to do, the vision he has for that defense?
I see what he wants to do. He has not been able to implement it yet, and part of that may just go back to him not having the players yet. It's not been good, and I think it's been disappointing. Saleh has talked about how he wants to keep the defense simple so guys can play fast. They don't have to overthink things. Well, you've seen a lot of instances where guys have been in the wrong position, where they've not communicated well. The Jets are a team that likes to drop the extra safety in the box. Well, they haven't been very good against the run. So the things this defense is built on, they have not done that effectively. Another thing they like to do is limit the big plays. Well, they haven't done a very good job of that. The defense is pretty slow. Now, again, part of this is probably due to the players. I think that last week, notwithstanding, one of the troubling things is that the defense has gotten worse as the year has gone on. Now, that does not mean that Robert Saleh is destined to be a failure. Doesn't mean I'm ready to give up on him. But listen, I'd be lying to you if I told you before the start of the season that we'd be where we are and I'd be happy. I think it's been a disappointment so far. He has time to recover. And again, a lot of it is due to personnel. Jets are playing a very young defense. I think a lot of the guys starting on this defense are not going to be here in the long run. But I don't think it's reached expectations so far this year.
And that's it for today. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to it and leave it a 5-star review. Hope you have a great Thursday, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow to close out the week.